Welcome to it then. Welcome to another episode of The Sweet Spot, brought to you by The Racing Post in association with Free Super Tips. And as ever, on the punter's bag is the golf betting guru, the main man, Steve Palmer. Steve, how's your form?
I'm all right, thanks, Dave. How are you? The week promised so much last week. I thought it was going to be better than it was. Thunderbear Olsson in the thick of things throughout in Abu Dhabi. And then Nico Echeverria tied for the lead going into the final round. Thunderbear finished third. Nico Echeverria finished sixth. So, I was a bit cheesed off on Sunday night, to be honest, Dave. We go again this week.
Well, I know you was getting a little bit excited because we exchanged messages. There was a couple of line bets going with Donald and Greyhounds to win Irish derbies, as well as golfers. There was all sorts happening.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Thunderbear Olsson, Nico Echeverria, Donald Trump to win the election, and Bocco's Diamond to win the Irish Ground Derby. I mean, that was a potential mortgage spitter. It was looking good at one stage, looking really good at one stage. But we had to settle for the place money. We made a fractional profit last week because we had decent stakes on Thunderbear. But I'm feeling good, Dave. I feel pretty confident about this week. Hopes are high.
Hopes are good. Well, make sure you like, comment and subscribe if you backed Donald Trump or if you're backing Bocco's Diamond to win the Irish Derby. Let us know in the comments. You know, we're here for all sports, of course, mainly golf, only golf. But let us know if you were a Trump backer like our Steve. Right, let's look back then before we look forward. We had a little chat before we started rolling here, Steve. And I know you beat yourself up, but I don't want you to beat yourself up about Paul Waring getting back to winning ways here. It's been a while. It's been a long, long time. I think it was a second career success. Back in 2018, I found the Nordea Masters was a winner of that. But it was 125-1. I didn't fancy him at any stage. I always felt like someone was going to reel him in. But he did it well. Fair play to him. He had balls of steel at the end.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, couldn't have put it better. Yeah, such a gutsy front-running performance. You know, so much on the line. It's not just winning the Abu Dhabi Championship there. He has a huge amount of money and a PGA Tour card. He knew if he won that tournament, he's going to earn a PGA Tour card for next season. So, you know, for a 39-year-old who, you know, he's never been filthy rich, we look at a lot of these golfers as if they're all multi-billionaires. But Paul Waring isn't. So there was so much money on the line for him on Sunday. And, you know, to do it from the front is the hardest way. 19 under par for his first 36 holes. It was an incredible start. You like your greyhounds, don't you, Dave? I mean, that's like a greyhound that like a rocketed to the first corner. You know, he was so far clear. He birdied 50% of his holes. 50% of his holes were birdies in the first 36 holes. So inevitably, he couldn't sustain that. Saturday, there was it was a pretty significant wobble, was it? 73 on Saturday. You think after the 73 on Saturday, you know, it's going to be one of those classic greyhound performances where they fly out, haven't got the stamina to get home. But then the bogey-free 66 on Sunday, that was the one. I mean, my word.
11 birdies.
Oh, I mean, bogey-free defending that lead against some of the best players in the world. It's not like he had mugs chasing him. And decisive birdies at the final two holes because Tyrrell Hatton birdied the last hole to level up with Waring. So, yeah, Waring birdied 17, birdied 18. Yeah, you just have to doff your cap and you have to be, I was delighted for him. I think some punters would have had him, Dave. I mean, there were reasons for speculating that he might go, well, he's Dubai-based. I mean, we went for a Dubai-based player in Thunderbear Olsson. Yeah, Waring settled there. His preparation would have been much better than a lot of the other players in the field. And he loves Lynx golf. He's a Birkenhead boy. He's grown up as a Lynx golfer. So there were reasons, but he'd missed his previous two cuts at Yas Lynx. There'd been two previous editions. He missed a cut in both. So that was the moment where I scrubbed him from my thoughts. But I think some people would have backed him. Yeah, popular lad.
Is it harsh to call him a journeyman? I saw one or two calling him a journeyman afterwards.
No. I don't think that's harsh. I think he'd accept that himself. He's just one very minor event, the Nordea Masters that you mentioned. But he stepped up a level in the last couple of years. He's a funny one. He's always had issues with his eyes. He's like worn glasses for a lot of times. Just delighted for him. Paul Waring, a very likable chap. And I don't like it when the punters Yeah, that was one for the bookies, wasn't it? Obviously, so that's the only negative about it. But as a human interest story, I couldn't have been happier.
We'll call that a Skinner. I suppose it was a Skinner. One or two might have backed him, but he was a tough find. Has it been a caddy change there? There was a little bit of caddy chat afterwards.
Oh, was there a caddy chat afterwards? I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. But I think Paul Waring on the PGA Tour, he can't believe it. I mean, he's just suddenly propelled himself in there. And that's the thing. We're going to discuss this a lot on this podcast. The Race to Dubai rankings, the top 10. It isn't the top 10 because there are players in that top 10. Like Rory McIlroy's top of the Race to Dubai ranking. So he doesn't obviously need a PGA Tour card. So it does go all the way down to... gives players great hope going into these final two events that they can sneak one like that. I think it brings spice to the DP World Tour. There's a lot of naysayers that say, "Oh, we're just a feeder tour for the PGA Tour." They're all negative about it, but I think it brings a real added element of spice to it.
Yeah, I like it. It's a very lucrative as well, isn't it? Of course, and it was lovely to hear Paul say afterwards, because we're on first name terms, of course, that, he'd moved to Dubai and he was like, "Oh, it's a bit of a trek, that commute now." And I just thought, what a normal chap, a normal thing to say. Like, there's no, I want to thank everyone, my agent, the caddy, blah, blah, blah. Just seemed like a really nice bloke. So,
He's clearly a nice bloke. And it's a brave move, isn't it, to relocate to Dubai and at the age of 38 or whenever he did it. I saw Judd Trump. We just get another sport in. Judd Trump's just moved to Hong Kong, isn't he? There's a lot of these elite sportsmen who think that they're better off based, in Asia rather than over here, because it does eliminate the commutes for big events like that. So, I think Ronnie O'Sullivan live in Hong Kong? I think Ronnie O'Sullivan moved over.
He's
there.
All over the place. He's got houses. He's having me in Saudi Arabia. He's doing all sorts. But those lads will be creaming it off the exhibitions out in Asia. So
yeah, of course. So yeah, when you're an elite sportsman, you've just got to look at your calendar and where am I going to be? Where is it best to position myself in the world? And in the olden days, obviously, if you're born in Birkenhead, you stay in Birkenhead. But now, your horizons can really widen these days.
Any other takeaways, Steve? You mentioned there was a star-studded field giving chase. Obviously, none of them reeled him in. But any other takeaways?
Well, Tyrrell Hatton's course form now. I mean, he's obviously he blotted his copybook in the past at Yas Links when he said he wanted the 18th hole to be bombed. But his course form figures at Yas Links now are 6-7-2. He obviously likes the other 17 holes. He played that 18th hole in 3-under par last week. So I don't know why he's got such a issue with that. But Hatton obviously banked loads of Ryder Cup points. So I think it was a big success for Luke Donald last week. He'll be hoping that Tyrrell Hatton plays as much as possible on the DP World Tour and gets a Ryder Cup spot. I mean, Thunderbear Olesen, you talk about beating ourselves up. I'm not going to beat myself up for that. He played so well from tee to green and the uncharacteristically poor putting. The first round was exquisite, but rounds two, particularly rounds two and three, following him was tormenting experience because so many chances went begging. But he loves that course and he's in contention for 72 holes. And then the final one we should talk about is Tom McKibben, because obviously he's been a big feature of Sweet Spot this year. I thought he would have the PGA Tour card wrapped up by now. But it's really in the balance going into the final event. He's one position shy of the qualification spots for the PGA Tour next season. So massive pressure on a 21-year-old's shoulders this week. He'd be fuming that it's come down to this. But he shot 64 on Sunday to stay well in the hunt. That could be a massive round for him, that final round 64. So yeah, we'll see if McKibben gets the PGA Tour card.
Right, we'll get on to all of that. Right, the Worldwide Technology Championship, 40-1 winner, Ekroat. Talk us through this one, Steve.
Yeah, fascinating story about his putter. He put a new putter in the bag last week. He's had the same putter since the age of 13. He said that this is the first win he's had since the age of 13 with a different putter. He's very loyal to his ping putter that he's grown up with. He's 25 now. But he was 132nd in the putting stats going into last week. So he decided to abandon his beloved ping putter for a different model. And he held everything last week. It was a great decision. He was fourth in the putting stats last week, two-time PGA Tour champion. And I think it sort of proved what a win can do for you, because he was up against maidens. Once our man Nico Echeverria drifted out of it, everyone else on the leaderboard were maidens, and Ekro obviously had that win already. So I think he's very comfortable around those players.
Yeah, some from our unfamiliar names giving chase. We had Justin Lower and Carson Young, both a shot behind. Not exactly a prolific bunch giving chase, was it?
No, and Juan Checheverria made a double bogey. He made a double bogey at the seventh hole. And Ekro was going bananas. And that was the moment on Sunday night where I realised that Echeverria wasn't going to win. I was pleased he rallied a bit to get a place in the end. Once Echeverria had gone, I was supporting Justin Lower, to be honest with you, because Justin Lower's backstory, I don't know whether you're aware of it, he's had a really difficult time of it. He grew up playing golf. His dad and his little brother dropped him off at the golf course one weekend. So he practiced at the golf course all day, and then his dad come and picked him up. His dad never picked him up that day when he was 15 years old. His dad and his little brother died in the car crash. It's a horrible backstory for Justin Lower. Similar to Nate Lashley's, actually. You look at these elite sportsmen, think they're the luckiest people in the world playing golf for a living. But there's so much more. Yeah, there's a lot of players that have had difficult upbringings, and Justin Lower is one of them. So I was really, really cheering him on Sunday, hoping he could get his first win. He's 35 now, so 20 years ago, lost his dad and his little brother. And at the age of 35, nearly made the breakthrough there, one shot behind Ekro. So hopefully at some stage he'll get a win.
Any other takeaways from that event?
Well, Max Graseman, we have to mention Max Graseman, don't he? He went off as favourite last week, 18-1 favourite, finished fourth. So his form figures now on the PGA Tour, 2-2, 33, 28, 2-4. So just consistently contending. He's up to world number 37 without having won anything. Never won on the Korn Ferry Tour, never won on the PGA Tour, and he's world number 37. Back Max Graseman each way if you're going to play him in future. But he's having a week off this week. And then one final point, Dave, just a minor rant about how easy the golf courses are. I don't know how you feel. I think you prefer watching difficult golf courses, don't you?
Struggles. I like the struggles, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Both tournaments won last week with 24 under par. It's just not as entertaining, is it? And Tiger Woods, you know, is my hero. He's obviously been asked to design that course in Mexico. You want to encourage tourists to go there, don't you? You don't want to make it too difficult because it put the tourists off. But there is a balance to be struck. You know, maybe you shouldn't be playing professional events at such easy golf courses. Those fairways are so wide. I mean, you would have broken par at El Cardinal. I just found it a little bit dull at times. You know, they need to make it tougher for these.
No, I like watching it, Steve, where there's real danger. You know, you've got to tread carefully here. You can't take a driver off the tee. You have to lay up. You can't go for the green. You know, if you short side yourself, you know, you're looking at a double rather than trying to save par. That makes it more exciting. And I think the golfers can look a little bit more human as well.
That's it. Every player finished under par at Yas Links. Every player in the field under par. And then, the Mexico course is too easy. I mean, Tiger Woods, you'd think he'd design tougher ones, but maybe maybe they've got people in his ear telling him he can't. But, that's just a minor rant, and it's not going to help us pick winners. So I'm glad I got it off my chest.
No, I'm in complete agreement with you there, Steve. So I'm sure there are plenty. If you're in agreement, let us know in the comments. Do you like them shooting the lights out, or do you like them scrambling for par? Let us know in the comments. We'll try and read some of them out on the next show. Right, should we look forward then? We've got a huge one. DP World Tour Championship, the biggie. We've already spoke about the many different storylines that are going to be running alongside this event. First of all, Steve, just talk to us about the course. Where are we off to?
The Earth Course. Jumeirah Golf Estates, Dubai, United Arab Emirates. 7,675 yards. Par 72, four par fives. Greg Norman designed this course. It's hosted this tournament since 2009. Fairways are generous. Greens are large, but they're undulating and quick. Lots of runoff areas around them. The winning score has been between 14 and 25 under par in all 15 previous editions. We've got some breeze every afternoon this week, so I think something in the high teens will be enough to win this time. Field of 50 going to post. supposed to be the top 50 in the Race to Dubai rankings, but Ludwig Aubert and John Rahm decided not to enter. So Connor Simon, Francesco Laporta are the lucky ones. They've snuck in from 51st and 52nd on the rankings.
No cut. Right. 2009, you mentioned there. Bit of trivia. Who won the first event?
Is it Westwood?
Yes, very good, Steve.
Yeah, Lee Westwood. Very good. Those were the days, weren't they?
Right. So before we dive into the event itself, for those that don't know, this is like the season finale. So what's at stake here, other than obviously the winner cops a right hefty check? What else is at play?
Yeah, the winner cops a right hefty check, and there's bonus checks as well, you know, for your position in the Race to Dubai rankings. So yeah, absolute fortunes. I know a lot of people find it very unsavory about the how much these golfers get for knocking a little white ball around a field. They probably are overpaid, but then it gives us all that aspiration, doesn't it, to become professional golfers. Certainly our sons. You got a son, Dave? You got a son, haven't you?
Two daughters.
Oh, well, it's the same thing. Loads of money in lady golf now. Winning the US Open, won about $2 million last year, didn't they, I believe, in the ladies golf. So, I think aspiration comes with those hearty checks, even though money can't buy you love. That was a ramble.
Listen, I wasn't asked you justifying the winner's checks for this event. Just talk to us about the PGA Tour cards up for grabs, and obviously
loads of money, loads of money, and then 10 PGA Tour cards. And as I say, if you've already got a PGA Tour card and you're in that top 10, then it moves down. So I think it's at about 17th in the rankings might get you the gig. And Tom McKibben is the one that I'm keeping a close eye on, because I was convinced he would get a PGA Tour card. And I still think he will sneak in, but massive pressure on a 21-year-old knowing that carrot is there. That's an enormous carrot, isn't it, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, before we get into the market, do you think, is there a scenario in which that can come into play at the back end of this tournament where someone like McKibben is like, do you know what, I don't need to go all out and try and win this event. I'm quite happy, you know, finishing where I am, and then I'm moving on.
Yeah, I think it's already been in play. I actually looked at players last week, like Nicholas Norgaard was in position to win a PGA Tour card, and I was tempted by him last week, and I thought, no, he's going to play solid golf just to pick up a decent check. He's not going to go all out for the victory. So that's what put me off him. There are certain players that will be aware of it, absolutely no doubt. It was the same last year. So, it is a factor, and I've put it all into calculations, Dave. Don't you worry.
Lovely. You won it last year, of course. My God. Right, let's have a look at the market then, shall we? McIlroy, 4-1. Tyrrell Hatton, 6-1. Fleetwood, I think he's as big as 9-1. Neiman, 14s. Matt Wallace, 18s. And then his 20s bar. How many in the team, Steve?
Just two selections, Dave.
Just two. Two out of the 50. I like it. Who is the main selection then this week?
Matt Wallace. 18-1, Matt Wallace, who tied third in the Abu Dhabi Championship on Sunday. He was superb from tee to green all week. He had a cold putter for the first 3 days. Got his rock rolling nicely on Sunday. Closed with a bogey-free 63. Two eagles on Sunday. 5 birdies, 11 pars. Wallace is at the peak of his powers for me. He won for us at Cranthyr in September. He hasn't played many suitable tracks since then, for my money, but the Earth course, right up his alley. And he showed that to incredible effect last year. We had the winner last year in Nikolai Hoggar. The man who gave us most to fret about last year as Hoggar backers was Matt Wallace. Wallace led after 3 rounds, courtesy of a quite staggering Saturday effort. He carded a third round 60, Dave, a 12 under par round. Can you remember his back 9 on the Saturday of last year's event?
It's etched in my memory.
Is it etched in your memory? Yeah. Well, it's etched in my memory because I still can't quite believe it. His back 9 was birdie, 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 birdie. He birdied every single hole of the back 9, Dave. I remember watching it with little Tommy Tiger and he's pointing out all the red on the. I was just thinking, oh, this can't be happening. It's staggering to birdie every hole of that back nine. It's not an easy nine holes. You know, there's plenty that can go wrong in those holes. So yeah, it was one of the most amazing golfing achievements I've ever seen. He tied for second place in the end, behind a man who hasn't qualified for this year. Nicolai Hogar has not qualified for his title defence. Wallace also finished second at the Earth Course on his debut in 2018. His full course form figures are 2.28, 2.29, 2. He's had two other second places in Dubai on the DP World Tour at other events. I see a sixth DP World Tour title on Sunday for a player whose temperament has become a strength, I'd say now. Yeah, he used to be a real hothead. He was a caddy's worst nightmare. A bit like you, Dave, a real hothead in the past. But at the age of 34, Wallace, much more mature, a PGA Tour champion. He's not playing with any of the worries that we just mentioned about getting a PGA Tour card for next season. He's got all the playing rights he could wish for. The only thing in his mind is winning this tournament and Ryder Cup points. He senses a Ryder Cup debut is in the offing. So everything rosy in the world of Matt Wallace. And I think he'll make our lives a little rosier on Sunday, Dave.
Lovely. That is lovely. I wonder how many people refreshed their YouTube page there thinking that they'd maybe lagged or frozen on you repeatedly saying birdie. But there we go.
Well, there's many different ways you can say birdie. I try my best. You know, Andrew Coltart, the Scottish commentator, always says it really funny, doesn't he? Birdie. Birdie.
How conscious were you of making sure that you nailed nine?
I was counting down here, actually, yeah, to make sure I nailed nine, yeah. The ultimate professional.
Right, we're going with Matt Wallace then as the main selection, and we've got one other. Who is it?
Rasmus Hogar. 22-1, Rasmus Hogar, who can approach this tournament in an entirely different manner to how he did 12 months ago. Rasmus, full of tension coming to this tournament 12 months ago, desperate to earn a PGA Tour card. He was in a similar boat to Tom McKibben. It was right in the balance. He opened with a very nervy 74, completely understandable. On Sunday, still had a golden chance going up the 72nd hole. He hit his second shot into the water because it's hard to tell where you are in that. You have a rough idea, but you can't be certain. He decided to go for the green, found the greenside water, missed out on a PGA Tour card by one position. Matthew Pavon just pipped him to that final card. So heartache for Hogar. He has to watch his twin brother. He's delighted for his twin brother, Nikolai, winning the tournament. But you know, he's devastated that he's missed out and he's not be able to join his twin brother on the PGA Tour. But all different this year. 12 months on, you know, you can imagine the determination that Rasmus Hogar started this season with. He played as much golf as possible. He was not going to let this slip this time. He started the year with five consecutive tournaments in the Middle East, played in all of those Middle East tournaments, 11-11, 2-8-6. So laid a really good foundation for the year. Then he was fourth in the KLM Open, third in the British Masters, won the Irish Open in September, propelled himself up the Race to Dubai rankings, and then fourth spot in the Andalusia Masters last month, effectively sealed the deal. Mid-division in Abu Dhabi last week was enough. He's third in the Race to Dubai rankings, Dave. The PGA Tour card is assured. He can approach this tournament with gay abandon, and it's an ideal fit for him. Yeah, it's great course for him. He's finished 7th and 11th the last 2 years. I think there's a fair chance we're going to see back-to-back Hogar victories at the Earth Course, Rasmus following his brother Nikolai, and that'll be a sixth DP World Tour title for Rasmus. So Wallace and Hogar, prolific DP World Tour champions.
Yeah, I'm on that train, definitely. I like the...
Welcome aboard.
Just focus on winning this golf tournament. Don't worry about all the noise going around everything else. Just focus on winning this golf
Absolutely.
Tournament. Now, there is a lot of noise. There's a
tickets, please. A tickets, please.
Sorry. There is a battle to win the whole thing. Looks like Rory's going to win it again, though, Steve. I think 11th or better will do him, I think I read.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Good research, Dave. And I think you're right. I think Rory will win it. And he's catching up with Colin Montgomery. That'll be a sixth Race to Dubai title. Colin Montgomery's won 8 Order of Merit. Seve Ballesteros won 6 Order of Merit. So McIlroy is slowly but surely becoming, you know, the greatest golfer in European Tour history. He's 35 years old. Will he catch Monty? yeah, it'd be a good betting market if a bookmaker's up for it. It'd be close. I expect he probably will. But yeah, he's very tempting favourite this week. Yeah, 4-1 is available. The only course winner in the field. Yeah, we mentioned Nikolai Hoggard not qualifying. There's only one player in this field who has won on this course before. He's won twice. He's got a phenomenally consistent record at this track. He finished 22nd last year, which might put a lot of punters off, but he was testing a new driver, you might remember. So I disregard that. Every other time he's finished in the top 20. He's won the Dubai Desert Classic 4 times. Loves teeing up in this part of the world. And I was very tempted. I admit I was very tempted. But it's just these swing changes, Dave. I don't know whether you've been following.
Yeah, no, he locked himself away and he was not watching ball flights and all sorts.
That's it. Yeah. After the Dunhill Links, he had a month off, so he locked himself away, which doesn't bode well for the, you know, we know he's had issues with his marriage and, you know, divorce papers and that. It sounds like since the Dunhill Links, he just spent a month in his man cave on his simulator, which I don't think is going to help but restore relations. But he's been working on a new backswing. And you'll see the pre-shot routine last week was slightly different. And swing changes just ring alarm bells as a punter because they take time to bed in. And I know it was really encouraging last week. His driving was excellent last week. It looked like it was working, but you never know how these swing changes are going to work out. As soon as I hear that a player is involved in that, it puts me off them, and particularly at a short price. You just want no doubt in your mind, don't you, when you're playing at a short price like that. Swing changes bring that element of jeopardy, which has put me off. So, yeah, if I was going to have three, I'd have McIlroy as well. But I much prefer each-way attacks on Matt Wallace and rather than Hoggar.
Is this what, you know, why the greats are the greats, trying to eke out that extra percent or so? Because I listened to McIlroy, I read all the quotes about him locking himself away, and I thought, you know, you've been knocking on the door. I know... You know, it's not as if he's been missing cuts left, right and centre and been tailed off the field. He's been in the mix this year and things have not gone his way, where it's been kind of a mental block. You know, it didn't strike me as, you know, it looks like he's really struggling with his swing. So no, I just thought it was a bit of a strange one, Steve.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. Yeah, I don't think it's the swing that's caused the problems this year, is it? It's been just been a lot of bad luck. There's been a lot of bad luck in contention and some missed tiddlers. If he was going to work on anything, I would suggest working on the putting might be the issue. But obviously he knows his game better than anyone, and he feels that he's got issues with his backswing. Maybe this is the missing link. I mean, he often at this time of the year, he's already thinking about the Masters. It's crazy how much that tournament's in his head. And the Masters is the next major, and he's already talking about his schedule for next year, and what changes he can make to his schedule. He seems to think tinkering with the schedule will be the key to winning a first green jacket. If he thinks a month in the man cave on the simulator is going to help him win the Masters, then good luck to him. You know, he knows better than us, Dave. But you're right. I don't look at his swing, and I don't look at the way he struck the ball this year and think he's got issues. He doesn't need to do anything major there, in my opinion.
Right, other runners then. Tyrrell Hatton, second favourite. Thoughts on him?
I think this is a driver's track, Dave. Yeah, it's very long, very open. Hatton, you'd have to say he's a complete player now, but driving is not a strength of his, I'd say. The price doesn't excite me. So you've got McIlroy at 4-1, Hatton at 6-1. Neither of those prices excite me. Tommy Fleetwood at 8-1. That doesn't excite me. You just can't excite me with those three, Dave. Try as you might. Fleetwood
is a... Neiman at 14s. That excites me. He's a great player.
I don't know. He didn't putt very well last week. That doesn't excite me either, Dave. I didn't get excited until Matt Wallace arrived on the scene in that betting show. Fleetwood doesn't win enough, does he? I mean, he's a solid each way bet.
I've deserted him.
He's Dubai based, isn't he? So Paul Waring won last week. Dubai based. Tommy Fleetwood, Dubai based. Yeah, this is a home game for Fleetwood. He was second last year. Again, as I said last week, if I was going to bat one of those three, I don't know. They don't excite me. No, if I was going to bat one of those three, I'd bat McIlroy actually, but I can live without all of them. I could live without all of them last week and that worked out. I can live without all of them this week.
Well, I'm going to throw one more name at you before we move on to the Bermuda Championship. Ollison, 22s.
Well, Dubai based. He does love playing in Dubai, but if you look at his record on the earth course, it's humdrum. It's a humdrum record. He hasn't done really badly, but he's never contended. He's never got near the higher reaches of the leaderboard. It's an off-putting course record.
Okay, sweet. That's cool. I'll accept that. Right, we're going to head off to the Bermuda Championship. Before we do, just give us a slightly wider shot of that resplendent jumper there. Stephen, let us know what number you're batting at this week.
It's not a cricket jumper. I did dug it out a corner of the wardrobe. I must admit, it hasn't been worn for a long, long time. But no, it's not a cricket jumper. I'm not fit enough to play cricket.
It's turned cold, isn't it? It's turned cold. You've gone for the wall.
Yeah, it has turned a little bit. It has turned a little bit. But yeah, what do we expect? It's almost Christmas, isn't it?
Oh, that's a yellow, that is, mentioning the C word there. Another one of that, and it'll be a red for you, young man. Right, Bermuda Championship, Steve, talk to us about the track.
Yes, Port Royal Golf Course, Southampton, Bermuda, 6,828 yards, par 71, only three par fives. The Bermuda Championship was staged for the first time in 2019, always at this venue. It's a coastal track overlooking the Atlantic Ocean, wide fairways, huge undulating greens. Wind is the main defense of this course, and thankfully we've got loads of it coming this week. A mixture of sunshine and showers, but consistent breeze. So you want players that can handle the breeze in your team. We've got a field of 120 going to post.
I'm going to chuck this at you, a bit of a one left field, but any previous winners in the field? I didn't check that one here.
Yes. We have got previous winners in the field. I mean, the defending champion Camilo Villegas is there. Very emotional victory last year. You must remember that one. I mean, yeah. I didn't have a penny on, and I was gushing tears. Can you gush tears? I suppose you can. He's again like another golfer. Like, you look at him with envy. But what's Camilo Villegas been through? You know, his daughter dying so young, brain cancer. I mean, the poor bugger. And I was delighted for him last year. I remember being our pleased. So yeah, he's in the field. Camilo Villegas is in the field, and then one or two others. Good putters have done well on this course, because the greens are huge, and you need a good touch. Lots of three putts for weaker putters. But this year, I think because of the wind in the forecast is so severe, I think you're going to really golf your ball, Dave.
Okay, right. So let's talk about who is in the field then. And the jolly, we've got a couple at the head of the market here. Maverick McNealy, 18s. Seamus Power, 18s. Mackenzie Hughes, 18s. Then we've got Ben Griffin at 20s. And a whole host of other players at 20s and 25s. Wide open here. There's no 4-1 jolly McIlroy here, Steve. It's 18 the field. What do you make of that?
Very much so. Yes. Yeah, it is wide open. I think there's one player that should be favourite, and he is my number one tip.
Right. How many are you putting up for the Bermuda?
4-8!
Was that four?
Four right ones, yeah.
Four, right. So we've got 8 each way doubles this week. Lovely. Who is the main selection?
Only one of them can be right, I suppose. But yeah, they're all going to finish in the each way places. The number one selection is Seamus Power. 16-1, the power and the glory will be with Seamus this week. He finished 31st in the inaugural Bermuda Championship in 2019. He was world number 406 at the time. He was 37th in 2020 when world number 393. But then his career took off. He finished 12th in 2021. Then he won the Bermuda Championship in 2022. A bold front-running performance in strong winds. Didn't get to defend the title last year because he's had injury problems. He's had a hip issue, kept him on the sidelines for a long time, took him ages to get going again. But the last 8 months have been really encouraging. A tie for 12th place in the RBC Heritage in April was a really positive sign for Power fans. Power was being restored. 8 of his last 17 tournaments have yielded a top 20 finish. Half of those top 20s, Dave, were in signature events with elite fields. He's finished in the top 15 in 4 of his last 5 PGA Tour starts. He finished 13th in the Zozo Championship last time out. He carded a career low round of 62 in that tournament. Power appears to be peaking, Dave. Bit of a tongue twister. Try it after a few teasers. Power appears to be peaking. And he's chasing a third PGA Tour title this week. The windy forecast, icing on the cake for Power fans. That would only encourage the Irishman. This is a perfect assignment for Seamus Edmund Power.
Okay, this is certainly not a signature field, is it? So that bodes well.
No. It's very important to consider the opposition. It's, you know, don't just look at the results. Look at what they've been up against. And Power has been, you know, churning out healthy checks in top company. I mean, if you look at Austin Eckroat last week, Austin Eckroat had been playing well in good events. Obviously that counts for more. If you're up against your Scotty Schefflers and your Rory McIlroys and you get a top 20, yeah, it's a lot. There's so much you've got to put into your melting pot, Dave, and bring your soup to the boil.
Powers in the pot. Right, who is the next best then in Bermuda?
Doug Gim. Thank you, Doug. We're keeping the faith with Doug Gim. 18-1 available as we live and breathe. He was slow into stride last week, Dave, which was disappointing. Got better as the week wore on. Rounds of 72, 70, 67, 65. Finished 20th last week. A continuation of rock solid form. He was runner-up from the wrong side of the draw in the Shriners Children's Open, 27th in the Zozo after a poor first round. His ball-striking class should put him in contention this week at a windy Port Royal. Gim is arguably the best player in the field on approach, I'd say. He was churning out greens in regulation in the wind in the Shriners. As I say, really unlucky with the tee times and was striking his ball so well it didn't matter. He was bogey-free over the weekend of the Shriners. He's a former world number one amateur. I see him doing a similar job in the wind of Bermuda. His previous starts in this event, he's either been in terrible form or well down the world rankings or both. He was 14th in 2020. He's missed three cuts here also, but this time the form is so solid. 8 top 50s in a row. He's the world number 90, which in this field is, you know, makes him one of the best players in attendance. Yeah, it's a great breakthrough opportunity for Doug.
You've already mentioned sort of the field. You just mentioned another factor there that I think can easily be overlooked, and that's the draw. You know, if you can find a player that's fared best from a bad tee time, that's obviously a player in good nick, and this ticks that box.
Well, Gim was really unlucky at the Shriners. You know, JT Poston won that from the right side of the draw. There was a four-shot difference between the morning starters and the afternoon starters. Gim defiant there. So, I think he plays well in the wind. The windier it is, the more chance Doug Gim's got of winning this.
Outside of just looking at the results and who teed off when, is there any way of sort of collating that together, Steve?
You need to be on the ball as it's happening, really, to keep an eye on things. But don't worry, Dave, I'm always on the ball. I'm always watching. I'm watching everything. I like to watch.
Shall we move on to the third selection on that? Yes, there you go. We're here every Tuesday and in Wednesdays in the Racing Post. Nothing gets past Steve. There you go. That's all you need to know. Right, third selection then. Who are we going for?
Nico Echeverria. 35-1. He's been well backed already this week. I completely understand it. We're sticking with Nico Echeverria. He's a Colombian. A Colombian won this event 12 months ago. We've already mentioned him, Camilo Villegas. Are we going to get back-to-back Colombian winners? Entirely feasible. He's playing some great golf, is Nico. We're going to stick with him. He won the Zozo Championship. That was huge for Echeverria's confidence. You know, you look at the field for that one. Xander Schauffele, Colin Morikawa, Hideki Matsuyama. He beat all of them. He had Justin Thomas alongside him in the final group on the Sunday. And he fended off Justin Thomas. You know, such a gutsy effort on a tight, fiddly track. He led after three rounds in Mexico last week. Couldn't finish it off, but don't abandon him. There was a big clue after round three last week in his interview that he loves playing in the wind. If you look at the interview he gave after round three of the Worldwide Technology Championship, and he was sort of begging the Lord for wind on Sunday. He said, I hope it's windy tomorrow because I love playing in the wind. I've got all the shots to handle it. He didn't get his wish. It wasn't that windy on Sunday, and it was a disappointing final round for him. But this week, he gets his wish. All 4 days, really windy. Echeverria can show the skills that he insists he has. His maiden victory came in the Puerto Rico Open last year. Another island success could be coming this week. He's never been higher in the world rankings, Dave. You know, two fat ladies, 88th in the world rankings. You know, he's at the peak of his powers. I think we've got to stick with him. You know, why would you abandon Nico Echeverria, Dave? Can you answer me there?
No, I can't. How old is he?
He's 30 years of age. He's never been playing better. He's never been happier. Yeah,
I think he's in the form of his life, hasn't he?
He's so smiley. Like, yeah, he just literally can't wipe the smile off his face. I don't think Sunday's going to put him off. He made 5 birdies on Sunday. I know we had a disappointing Sunday, but it was only because Austin Eckroat went bananas. I mean, he made 5 birdies. He was 4th for greens and regulation over the course of the week. So, he's clicked into gear and we can't abandon him.
That's fair enough. He's a fair price as well. As you say, there's been a little bit of money around for him this week, so maybe act fast if you were going to latch on to him. Right, final selection is
Garrick Higo, 80-1, who will take a lot of encouragement from a fine around 64 in Mexico on Sunday. Only one player in the field outscored Higo on Sunday, Mr. Eckroat. Higo tied for 6th place in the tournament. He made 9 birdies on Sunday. He improved his round score each day. At the juicy prices being offered this week, we have to take a chance that that's a turning point in Higo's season. Yeah, this is a South African, quickly made his name on his home circuit. He won twice on the Sunshine Tour. Then he won 3 times on the DP World Tour. You must remember this, Dave. Made an explosive start to his DP World Tour career. All of those victories were by the coast. 2 of them were in the Canary Islands. Do you remember those back-to-back tournaments in the Canary Islands? So this lad loves island golf. Higo loves island golf. Bermuda is right up his alley. He made his PGA Tour breakthrough in 2021, the Palmetto Championship, went up to 38th in the world rankings. We're talking about former world number 38, but then fitness and form issues. He had issues with his wrist. The last 3 years have been fallow, but yeah, he's still only 25, and he's got so much talent. Port Royal form figures of 34-29 are pretty eye-catching when you look at how miserable these last 3 years have been for Higo. He struggled for results, but 34-29, solid efforts here, because I think this course is really suitable. So worth chancing at the odds.
Lovely. Nice big price. Island golfers, then, we're looking for. Let's have a look at just some of those at the top of the market. Player that we've been with a few times, Maverick McNealy. Very short price.
Gosh, yeah.
He doesn't get the job done, Steve. He just doesn't get the job done.
I sometimes wake up in the middle of the night. Well, I often wake up in the middle of the night. Normally a child is waking me up, or I'm having a night terror of some sort. And, Maverick McNealy gives me night terrors. You know, what a wasted talent. What a wasted golfing talent. I mean, does he really care? I mean, he's a billionaire, isn't he? I probably care more about Maverick McNealy's wasted talent than he does. He's 29 years of age now. He had a great chance on Sunday. He was 2 shots behind going into the final round last week. Another huge opportunity to shed that maiden tag. He made 13 pars on Sunday. So often he boards the par train when he's got a chance of winning. He ended up 7 shots behind. So is he going to be another Patrick Rogers, Dave? This is what I think. Yeah, Patrick Rogers and Maverick McNealy both went to Stanford University, the same university as Tiger Woods, both billed as future Tiger Woodses. Patrick Rogers, we all thought he was the next Tiger Woods. He's never won a tournament on the PGA Tour. He's 32 years of age. Maverick McNealy, we all thought he was next Tiger Woods. He's 29 years of age, never won a tournament on the PGA Tour. Yeah, Rogers and McNealy, the 2 biggest underachievers in golf, I'd say.
Why is he this price then, Steve?
Because he's blessed with an enormous amount of talent, and he played some good golf last week, and the bookmakers obviously expect him to win at some stage. I'm just wary of going near him at the moment.
Think just not big enough to even warrant like an each way, and just think, he probably won't win, but he might get there. I mean, there's been money around for him this week as well. Mackenzie Hughes, another one I can see bits and pieces of money around for him. What are your thoughts on him coming into this week?
Another player I couldn't back at short prices. Such a weak ball striker. Great short game, but I can see him hitting some wild drives in the wind this week. Griffin is a terrible driver. I mean, he's done well here before, but Ben Griffin, a very short price as well. So none of the market leaders excite me as much as Seamus Power. Seamus Power just looks rock solid to me. So hard to see him not contending, whereas the other 3 I just mentioned there, a bit more flaky. Seamus Power, really sort of solid character. He's another one with a difficult backstory. If you look into Seamus Power, I mean, he lost his mother at the age of 8. He's another one that's had to really dig deep and be resilient. And I think yeah, I think Seamus Power mentally very strong. And yeah, really solid bet, 16-1 each way.
Okay, well, give us an overview then this week. They have two tournaments, six selections across 2 and 4. Who are they?
You say the name of the tournament, Dave, and then I'll say the name of the players.
Right, DP. DP World Tour Championship.
Matt Wallace, Rasmus Hogger.
And the Bermuda Championship.
Seamus Power. Doug Gim. Thank you, Doug. Nico Echeverria. And Garrick Higo.
And now, be truthful.
Yeah, I've brought so much sadness to this podcast, and I apologise.
Be truthful, Steve. Is that your favourite part of the show every week?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah, I just like letting off steam, Dave. You know me. I like letting off steam.
You do love it, yeah.
Any way I can let off steam, I like to take it. Garrick Higo. There's so much sadness in this podcast. Garrick Higo's dad died when he was in his teens. I think he was 15. His dad died in a car crash. Be careful on the road, guys. I mean, blimmin' heck. You look at Garrick Higo. Would you want to swap places with Garrick Higo? Automatically, people struggling in difficult jobs, struggling to put bread on the table would say yes. Poor Garrick Higo's had a tough upbringing. He's minted golfer, but there's more to these stories than meets the eye, Dave.
Okay, that is not how I want to end this show. What you got coming up? What you got coming up this week, Steve? Anything exciting? Trip to the hairdressers?
I suppose I do need a trip to the hairdressers.
Looking golf. Resplendent. The Barnet's looking resplendent.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Dave. Yeah, we're gonna watch lots of golf. We're gonna watch lots of darts. The Grand Slam of darts. My poor old nephew. Let me just bring more sadness to the broadcast. My nephew's 18th birthday.
Please tell me no one else has died.
No one died, but his bet died. I got him Luke Humphreys to win the Grand Slam of darts as his 18th birthday present. And Luke Humphreys got knocked out of the group stages of the Grand Slam of darts. Luke Humphreys said his son's not been very well, so he was off the ball and he played poorly and he's got knocked out. So I feel terrible about the gift I gave my nephew. He's probably been put off betting for life there. I mean, the first bet I ever had, Dave, was a 40-1 winner. Steve Collins to beat Nigel Benn in round 4 of their boxing bout. So I was very enthused about betting from the off. My nephew's first experience of betting there is losing favourite in the darts. So,
Who's going to win it then, Steve? I know you like the Arrows. We're recording this on Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
Who's going to win it?
I jumped ship yesterday to Luke Littler. I think Luke Littler's been exceptional in the early rounds of this. He's I think Luke Littler will win the tournament. I think he'll beat Rob Cross in the final. So, I've backed those two since Humphreys went out.
Have you had him in cross doubles with Bocco's Diamond?
We can't get through this without mentioning Bocco's. You know my love for Bocco's. Semi-finals of the Irish Greyhound Derby on Saturday, guys. And then the final the Saturday after, Bocco's Diamond. One of the greatest greyhounds I have ever seen. Possibly the greatest greyhound I've ever seen, Dave. I don't know whether you've seen a better one. I think he's the best. I'm on Bocco's.
Big fan of Bocco's is Steve. Right, that is it then. We're back next week. We've got the Australian PGA and the RSM Classic as ever. Steve, we thank you for your time, expertise and everything in between. Enjoy the golf. Remember to give us a like, comment and subscribe to the Racing Post YouTube channel. Gamble responsibly, and we'll see you next week.